Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This week, we are brought to you once again by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. And you can direct any other questions on that to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
And I am Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast.
Bam. That just happened.
Indeed. Let's see. So, coming at you this week, we will get a couple guests here in a little bit. We got Alan and Jenny from Track Time. They operate up in Washington. But before we get them on here, we do need to cover this week's weekly riding tip.
We need a riding tip. I'm getting ready to go riding.
You're going riding. Where are we allowed to say where you're going riding? Or is it?
Yeah, later.
Okay.
Later today. Stay tuned.
More will come. Cole's silly season on the horizon.
I do have a bit of a silly season going, don't I?
Something like that. Anyway, this week's weekly riding tip brought to you once again by Bettinger Motorsports, which is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. They operate down at MSRH. And Josh Bettinger this week has to say the dreaded false neutral and how to deal with it.
Ooh.
Strap your seatbelts, boys and girls. This one is a good one. False neutrals can occur for several reasons. And when they do it, did I just say seatbelts? There's no seatbelts on motorcycles. Sorry. Anyway, when they do, it can cause dangerous situations, especially in a race if someone is hot on your tail. If your bike doesn't quite go into the intended gear or slips out of gear unintentionally, you lose drive, the physics of the bike and the steering are affected, and it's easy to get spooked. Many riders stand the bike up and run off track. If a false neutral occurs, stay focused. Try to go back to the previous gear rather than trying to jam forward again and again. If you just can't find a gear, signal to other riders that you have an issue and get offline ASAP. Sometimes a false neutral can come from mechanical issues, such as bent shift forks, not fully engaging the gear set, or worn transmission components allow the transmission to slip out of gear. However, false neutrals can also be rider error. Getting lazy on the shifter often causes the rider not get a full positive shift, and the transmission will find itself in between gears. So stay focused, make sure to make good, firm, complete shifts, and repair your transmission when false neutrals become a common issue with your bike rather than trying to ride with the problem. The dreaded false neutral. I've never actually had a false neutral. I've missed a gear shift before, but I don't think I've had a false neutral. But the part where he was talking about lazy shifting, those quick shifters that are on all the bikes these days, you know, that the old people hate and the young people are like, well, it's just the modern way. That I love, actually.
I love them, too.
I wasn't talking about you. I was talking to the old people.
Oh.
Yeah.
They don't get much older.
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder whether... we don't need to talk about quick shifters right now. I don't think we have time, but we can get into that later. But I have noticed myself before, because it's so easy to just... You know, you tap it, and there's the pressure sensor. So sometimes you get the pressure sensor to go, which cuts your engine for a half second, and then you never actually fully click up the gear. I don't know if you've run into that issue at all, but false neutrals.
That's a false neutral.
Is that what that is? Yeah, but you're not slipping out of gear.
So a false neutral to me is when you mean to go from third to second coming into a corner and it goes into neutral instead.
Right.
And then you've lost all your engine braking. You realize just how bad your brakes or how much your brakes aren't doing for you at that moment. Mm-hmm. And you go into full panic mode. But since you brought up the quick shifters, I just got to mention, this would never happen on my beautiful BMW. This would never happen. But occasionally there are times when maybe you've got that thing bouncing off the rev limiter and you try to do that quick shift and it says no.
Yeah, if you're going down, yeah.
and then, you know, to the earlier comment from Josh or Tip, that's the time to really focus and say, go back to where I was at, reevaluate.
Yeah.
Stay focused, make your sports making decisions and move along.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also wonder, because I know neither you nor I are running GP shift, and I wonder if that, as far as on the downshifts anyway, it's a lot easier to stand on a gear lever than to pull one up, right?
right?
So I feel like it's easier to miss a downshift if you're pulling up, at least from my experience, right? I've never missed a downshift per se. I have had that issue that you're talking about where there's not as much RPM as you would like there to be in the engine. Anyway, yeah. So that is false neutrals. Not a good time.
Do it. Just say no to false neutrals.
There you go. Yeah, that's our 2024 campaign. Just say no to false neutrals. I like that. That's good. All right. Well, that will wrap up the weekly writing tip. And we
appreciate it, Josh.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Make sure you guys go check them out. We got a link down in the description. If you're in the Texas area or you're looking to ride at COTA, you can ride with Ride Smart. Josh works very closely with them, but he operates himself down at MSRH. Does a lot of good training down there, cross training, mini bikes, great stuff. Go check them out. Give them a like and follow on Facebook and Instagram. And we will wait patiently for next week's writing tip.
Right. So now what? Can we get some guests on? You know, maybe roll the intro?
I think so. Yeah, I think we're ready to do that.
All right.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
I just heard that Don Williams, my favorite singer, is going to a goat show.
That's right.
You can't make this up for real. We call them goat rodeos, but apparently that's not correct.
I think rodeo, I like that better. It sounds a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, Don Williams oversees our instruction and what is he?
Rider development and instruction. He heads all that up for us.
Okay. And he owns a goat farm called Urban Acres Farm out in Seebeck, Washington. And they literally have a prize-winning goat farm where they have dwarf Nigerian goats and Nubian goats. And so they go around and show their goats. And I guess if you want to sell goats for a lot of money, they need to win a lot of prizes. And so they go around and show goats.
They don't have any of my favorite fainting goats.
They don't, but they do have a bison and a couple yak. And what else do they have out there? They got a bunch of stuff out of their farm.
A bison chickens, with goats. Wow.
Goats or chickens, ducks, geese.
And it's about 20 acres. So we feel like he needs to put like a little dirt track out there for us.
Agreed. Few less chickens, more jumps.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but we go out there. They have a once a year kind of a farm party, and you go out there, and it's kidding season. I've learned a lot about goats since Don has joined our team, but it's kidding season, and they have like tons of these little tiny babies that are just super adorable and friendly, and you can feed baby goats, you know, with a bottle of milk, and it's pretty fun.
I was going to say, note to the editor, my vote is the goat stuff makes it in.
Yeah, goat stuff can definitely stick around.
Well, we also do this little lasso and dance in our race suits when we say that Don's going to a goat rodeo. We do our little rodeo dance, which makes it even more hilarious. But I will say that I was watching a Moto America interview today with one of the young kids from Junior Cup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bless Roger Hayden, but this kid one word answers the whole time. It was hilarious. So they were just like trying to keep it going. And he's just like, yep, nope, that's right. You know, that the whole time, that's all they could get from him. He was, you know, younger Junior Cup guy, but it was pretty funny.
I didn't see that, but tell me it wasn't Chris Elliott.
No, it wasn't. I can't remember what the kid's name was, but I don't think he probably has had many interviews. So he'll take a little time to fine tune his skills.
That's a hard part about kids anyway. Sometimes I see some kids that are young and are already so good at interview, and I'm like, oh man, they're right. It took the kid out of them a little bit, because the one word answers, that's kind of fun to see. So you're like, that's still a kid out there on that motorcycle. That's awesome. He doesn't even know how to talk to people, but he can ride.
I was chuckling at Roger, and I can't remember the lady. It was lady with the dark hair, that they were kind of just, it was kind of funny to see them fumble a little bit with that interview today. Little self-entertainment, I guess.
Heck yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I guess to get started, if you guys don't mind, kind of just a quick introduction, who you are, what you do, what track time is. It's pretty obvious by the name, but I'll let you introduce
it. We're a track day organization. We started in 2016 up here. A buddy of mine, him and I started Track Time with the goal of making it safer, smaller rider counts in the groups, and instruction, available instruction to anybody that wanted it. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we started harvesting and looking for valuable coaches and riders. I'm a former road racer myself, so I had some contacts and things. And we just put together a pretty good crew, and we've built it. And my partner at the time, JD, he stepped away. And then Ken Hill came in, and him and I were partners for 4 years. And at the end of last year, I bought him out, and he had things he wanted to do. So it's all mine now. And it's been a good program. We've got Kayla Yakov. She's one of our coaches. We fly her in. And Ben Smith, he's also one of our coaches. I met Ben last year at Moto America doing some traveling and stuff with those guys. And yeah, we're just looking to try and be safer, faster, and get guys that are on the street off, right, you know, off being crazy, and just get them on the track where they can learn some skills. And it's been a great program for us.
I just want him to mention he has had a day job all this time. What's your day job?
Okay.
I was a parts and service manager, accessory manager for a motorcycle dealership in Olympia here. Honda, Suzuki, Polaris. Track time's just gotten so big the last year that I've stepped away from that. I go in and help out when I can a couple days a week maybe, and the rest of the time I'm dedicated to track time and growing it.
Okay. Awesome. So funny story. I don't know if you probably won't remember, but I actually met you there before I ever had gone to a racetrack. And I saw you had some sort of track hanging on the wall. I don't remember which one it was, but I saw that and I was like, that's a racetrack. I don't know anything else about it. But and then I'd signed up for my first track day ever. It happened to be with you guys up at the Ridge.
Yeah.
And I saw you again. I was like, I've seen you before. So
Right. That must have been around 16 or 17, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Easton was born in 16, 17.
Yeah, I'm really young. I think it was actually 2019, if I remember right. May of 2019 was my first ever track day up at the Ridge Motorsports Park, which I just noticed. I was looking at your schedule a couple of days ago, and are you guys down at Thunder Hill now also? ?
We do. I've been trying to grow track time a little bit and move outside of Washington. And I tried getting some dates at Thunder Hill, like to start the season, like maybe March or April. And then one at the end of the year, which happened to be, we had an opportunity to get October. So I got some staff, some customers down there in the Bay Area that enjoy coming up here. So I kind of got a hold of them. I said, what do you think, we should do this? And they said, oh yeah, we can sell this thing out. So we're rolling the dice, and we're going to go to Thunder Hill and run the west side October 26th and 27th and get our foot in the door and see if we can, maybe do a season opener and a season ending one, something like that, kind of sandwich the dates up here.
Something to extend our season up here. Our season up here is like Memorial Day through Labor Day. And we do, I mean, there are some early dates that you'll see and some late dates that you'll see, but the majority of motorcycle riding up here for track days is end of May through end of September. And that's pretty much a wrap.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's so wet.
Wet. Yeah.
However, that does not say that it doesn't rain regularly on a random July. You know, we had a race round up here. When was that? It was the beginning of May, and it was a soaker. And so I do always tell everybody, just learn to race in the rain or learn to ride in the rain. I mean, even on a track day, you could potentially spend 50% of your track days on the sidelines if you don't just get over it, throw on some rain tires and learn to go in the rain, and just the lessons that you can have in the rain. I mean, you can haul in the rain. But second of all, the throttle control and the brake control you develop by riding in the rain is some real great lessons. And it's actually pretty fun if you've ever spent any time riding in the rain.
Yeah, I think both of us have pretty minimal, and I think all of it was actually, well, besides you last weekend, Cole, but before that, I think it was all actually at the Ridge. Several track day mornings you show up and it's 40, something and foggy and there's puddles on the ground and you go ride anyway. And then at the end of the day, it usually cleared up and it was beautiful and made for a great weekend. So,
while we're on that note, I've ridden with Track Time 2 or 3 times. So I'm out of Utah, just so you're aware. Mm-hmm. But I've made the trek up there mostly because Easton used to live up there. So you'd say you gotta get up here, but I have been there without him as well. That one was a soaker, coincidentally, coincidentally, I don't want to bring up any of your competition, but I'll be there on Monday.
This Monday?
Yeah. How's my weather going to be?
It's going to be a soaker.
It's not looking good.
It is. I'm not kidding. Oh, and by the way, I'm Jenny, and I've been up in Washington since about 2019, and my super boring day job, I'm actually a contract manager for the state of Washington, and so I love motorcycle riding, but we're having an atmospheric river that's supposed to be here on Sunday, so I'm actually not even kidding. It's supposed to be a soaker.
Actual soaker. Yeah, that's...
Big soaker. Like, we're supposed to... They said, and I don't know what it's going to look like out at the ridge, but, like, no pun intended, but, like, not to rain on your parade here, but they literally said it could be, like, a couple inches of rain.
Wow. Well, strap on those rain tires, Cole.
They're in the trailer already.
You got a good one coming. That'll be good.
Do you have a rain suit?
I don't.
Well, get a garbage bag, cut a hole in the neck.
Gotta protect the leathers. I do actually, that's funny you bring that up, because I remember seeing that, all your staff coming out with the garbage bags on. I was like, that's kind of weird. I didn't do that. I probably should have, but.
At our last event, which was really great to see, we have a separate, some of our days we run a separate instruction group for just people who are focused on instruction. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's for a variety of reasons to benefit people who are trying to get instruction on the track. And I took a couple pictures out on the racetrack where you have like a dozen people lined up ready to go in the rain. And so that's always really good to see that people are, I mean, a lot of people who don't go out in the rain are fearful of going out in the rain until they go out and experience it a little bit. So it's great to see that we're seeing more people go out in the rain. And another thing that I tell people is rain pictures are always super cool. Even if you're not going fast, they look really cool.
That's true. Yeah. Cause you get all the nice, you know, water coming up off. Yeah. The spray and whatnot. So to dive into Track Time a little bit more, Alan, you mentioned, you know, safer, smaller groups. I can say the smaller groups are amazing. I loved it a lot. I know your prices are a little bit higher. We don't need to dive into that too much, but your prices are a little bit higher, but you offer that smaller group. What was it that kind of led you to that decision?
Well, I got talked into starting Track Time with my buddy, a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. And I refused to do it for 6 months. And then I finally caved in. I said, well, if we're going to do this, this is how I want to do it. I've been to a lot of other different track days, helped coach at other track days myself. And it's always like, hey, Alan, we're going to put you with these 5 guys and you're going to spend the day with them. And no matter what 5 guys or 3 guys you would get, nobody was even on the same page as skill level or anything like that. So you end up, you know, really maybe working with one person and not really working with the others. And I really wanted to focus on one-on-one stuff if we were going to do it, because I thought that's where the need was at the time. And there was nobody else doing something like that up here. I don't know about other parts of the country, but there was nobody up here doing it. I think that was kind of our niche that got our foot in the door.
Okay. The Ridge.
Yeah.
So you're just venturing out. You said, I think this is your first year going down to Thunder Hill. There are a couple other racetracks up in Washington. Is there a reason? I don't want to badmouth any racetracks, but I love the Ridge. Cole knows that. Anyone that listens to this podcast knows that, honestly, because.
Yeah.
Well, we have Pacific Raceways, which used to be, which is up in Kent, Washington, which is used to be Seattle. Was it Seattle International Raceway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love Pacific Raceways, and any race round that goes up there, I always go there.
Okay.
However, getting days at Pacific can be very hard because they're very focused on they're really into the drag racing scene, and they have some national events that come through, right?
They do, and having not any, never having dates there. Well, I shouldn't say that. We had one date there back in 2019. But because we haven't been in there a whole bunch, we're kind of way down the totem pole on the user groups.
Okay.
So trying to get in there is like, okay, we got two dates for you this year, and they're like Wednesdays. Do you want them? We've just kind of focused on the Ridge, and you know, we've gone down to PIR, Portland International Raceway, once, and again, it was kind of hard getting in there. And once we got in there, we had a really low turnout. And now Portland's kind of turned itself into a kind of a homeless encampment down there. So
very Portland-esque.
No sense in going down there and getting all our stuff stolen or customers' stuff stolen or broken too. And
it's actually a city park. And so there's a lot of,
not to bag on Portland, but
yeah, there's a lot of politics that go along with the city park, and it's not really a customer focused venue. And then also I can say, even though I can't say anything about Portland cause I've never ridden there, but, Pacific Raceways, even though I absolutely love that track, the facilities are very antiquated and very, very old. Like the bathrooms are kind of like camping bathrooms. There are no showers. I mean, there is like one secret shower that you don't want to use. Like if your foot touches the base of it, you probably should just cut your foot off and call it good. Right.
Okay.
So it's a really antiquated place, and I'm not sure why it's never been updated there. And the same family's owned it since it opened in the 50s.
All politics and improvements
and
getting permits and all that.
Yeah. It sounds like they're busy, which is a good thing.
Oh, they're really busy. And what's also really weird about it is it's literally like almost right in a very, urban area. So it's kind of like all within the Seattle vicinity. So it's bizarre to see a racetrack that is you hear all the problems about Laguna Seca being in, you know, a residential area. Well, this racetrack has been there so long, it's kind of grandfathered in, but it's in a pretty populated area, and it's a huge facility, and they have a really cool go-kart track. And we thought about trying to get some mini bike racing on the go-kart track, but they said a solid no on that. So we've tried some different things with Pacific, and they're also doing some, like building some garages and doing some other stuff up there. But they have like is it the NHRA that goes there? So they have the NHRA that goes there. So they are very focused on hot rods. And another thing that they do, they don't tell you that they're going to do, and this is such a bummer. It's like, oh, by the way, your track day is ending an hour early, and then the hot rods are coming out, and they're going to run until midnight. And so you're like,
there, you're not going to get to sleep for a while.
So you're like, what do you mean our track day is ending at 4? Right? And they're like, oh, well, that's just the way it goes. Like you're supposed to know that. And then they have the hot rods that run until midnight or 11:30. So you're like, what is happening in your little tin box trailer with all these hot rods, you know, going on the front straight there?
So we have some experience. We can back you up on the Portland thing as well. We have been there, and there's two things I remember from that day. I didn't love the track for a motorcycle. It was kind of boring.
They
told us in the driver's meeting to watch for goose poop.
Goose poop. Yes.
They can't do anything about it. Yeah. Cause it's a park. They can't shoot them or whatever. I don't know. Right. But I almost on my first or second lap, I almost got hit in the face with a tent pole. I don't remember what turn that is, but going into where you go up against the wall.
Yep. Turn six.
I was leaned in there, you know, still kind of checking out the track. I was kind of leaned in there, and I just caught out of the corner of my eye something that looked chrome. And it was a homeless guy setting up a tent, and he had his back turned, and they had the pole out over the wall in the track.
So Portland. That is so Portland. And then also the early race rounds that happened there, apparently when you get goose poop, because the geese have been, you know, crapping on the racetrack all winter long, they don't clean it. And then when you throw a little bit of water on that, apparently it's pretty slippery.
Yeah, that's what they warned us about in the track meeting. They're like, stick to the line, because if you go out, there's goose poop, and it's wet, and it's bad.
So, I don't know why. I mean, these are so many selling points for PIR. I don't know why more people don't go there. It's weird.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't always hear that good. So I remember looking at Easton saying, could you tell me what they just said? Because I didn't believe it when I heard it. But
right. No, it's true. The first race season of the year down there is all kinds of stories about the goose poop and people sliding and falling down. And I don't get it. But
I was going to say, you're starting to see now the Oregon Motorcycle Road Race Association, and which is OMRA, and then Washington Motorcycle Road Race Association. You're starting to see them do more joint rounds together, because as Oregon has gotten smaller and smaller, because I don't think they run on any other track besides Portland.
No, they don't.
To keep them viable, we're doing joint rounds together. And so they have a couple rounds at Portland. So they do, I think, two rounds at Portland, two rounds at the Ridge, two rounds at Pacific Raceway. So anybody who's trying to chase any type of championship kind of has to go to Portland. But you're starting to see those two race clubs do more joint rounds to keep them fiscally viable.
That makes sense. So they don't run out at, what is it, Oregon Raceway Park, the one that was up for sale?
Nobody races out there in the motorcycle world anyway. I don't know about the cars or carts, but the motorcycles, they'll go out there and do track days out there, but you're so far away from civilization, really. I mean, there's no amenities out there. Very, very, no place to stay, really. Fuel, food's a long ways away. You got to kind of pack everything in and stay the whole time. And
okay.
If you get hurt, there's no hospitals, nothing like that close by.
Well, I think now that we've bagged on the rest of the tracks around the area, that's a great transition into the beautiful facility that is the Ridge that has been growing year after year based off of maybe Moto America coming, maybe just the popularity. What say you?
Well, that's definitely what's going on. Every year they've made improvement. First there were bathrooms, and then there was garages, and then there was cafes and suites and things like that. They put down a lot more pavement. I don't know when the last time you guys were there.
Been two years ago for me, I think.
Okay. So then you got to see all that stuff. So It's way different than it was, let's say, 2016 or 17.
Yeah. And, I mean, I remember my first time up there was, they had the bathrooms and like shipping container buildings, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they built everything else, and there was more pavement. There's the grandstands, the catwalk. I wish they would open the catwalk up a little bit so you could see and
the
watch from it. I don't know.
Straightaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's open now. They've got grandstands up above and a food shack up there for big events. It's open.
Well, no, they have you can't, there's no viewing from the catwalk still. They have it with slats through it so you can't see.
You have to cross over and go up above.
Yeah. So
it's a cool facility.
With Moto America though, they you guys both have road racing experience, I believe.
Yeah,
I'm a former number one plate holder here in Washington from way back in the day.
Awesome. It took Moto America coming in to get the chicane.
Correct.
I'm curious to know, I know my opinions on the chicane. Curious to know how you guys feel about the chicane. And do you ever not run the chicane anymore, or
I can tell you from an organizational standpoint that the chicane offers a level of safety that makes running track days easier. So even though they charge you more to run the chicane previously, specifically with the big bikes, when they are hitting the turn one down towards the end of the straight, I mean, those bikes are hitting 170, 180 miles an hour. So historically, when you'd have somebody go off in turn one without the chicane, it was 50-50 if you had to have a helicopter ride from there. And so
it was bad when somebody go down in turn one. And if you got a couple bikes together, it just was no good. So from a track day standpoint, we started running the chicane, and we run the chicane at all our events.
Okay.
Just for that safe reason. Even the club racing now up there, they run the chicane. They don't do it like Moto America where you take the chicane on your start lap.
I like that.
we run all the way down to the turn one, and then we take the chicane on the laps after that.
Yeah, taking the chicane off the start.
That's insane.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen some of the six bike pileups and stuff off that. So our club racing you don't take the chicane on the outlap, which is really fun because, you know, you're cooking pretty good from the start into turn one, but you have to hit the chicane every other time, including your across the finish line.
Right.
Or else you get a penalty.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but there was somebody that had attended a club race right before a Moto America race last year that forgot that rule.
I won't name him, but he's a local guy up here. And the previous weekend was a warmer race and we don't run the chicane on the start. And he lined up and shot right down to the inside to go around a few people. And, oh, by the way, everybody started slowing down in front of him. And he collected up a couple guys, and yeah, it was just a bad deal.
We've also seen a Moto America racer who didn't take the chicane on the final lap, which they're supposed to, went way down past the chicane during a race, turned around during the race, went reverse course, and went back and got the chicane and was not disqualified. And we're all, you know, we have a RV spot at the Moto America, the camping area there, that's right at the chicane. Mm-hmm. And so for each year that we, since we were one of the, you know, first people signed up, we've kind of been grandfathered in, and they offer us that same spot every year, which subsequently we keep. But we're right at the chicane. So you see a lot of action right there. It's pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be.
It was awesome. I remember watching the first Moto America race there. I think it was the Superbikes that they went into the chicane right at that first. Like, you take off, you're on, immediately back off and on the brakes, and they go in, and then there was straw everywhere, and people everywhere. And yeah, so that makes sense. I think Moto America is Moto America, but the club race and skipping it for the first time makes a lot of sense.
Right.
It's actually a lot of fun skipping it for the when you take off, because you can be 5, 6, 7 riders wide going into turn one, going up into turn two. So it's pretty fun.
Well, what's your take on the chicane? You said you had your opinion.
Yeah. So I hated it when it first got put in and I first ever ran it. And I hadn't done too many track days at that point. I'd only ridden at the Ridge at that point, I think. And I came to love turn one because I could kind of just let off the gas nice and early and brake a little bit. And then there was always, like, I was never worried about it because it'll slow you down as you go up that hill, right? So you do any of your braking into turn one and then you're just done and slows you down. So the first time the chicane came, it was like real. I have a problem, personal problem with cones. I really hate cones out on the racetrack.
His bike's a cone magnet.
Yeah. Down in Arizona, they put up a fake chicane with cones to keep you from blowing their sound limiter at one of the racetracks down there. And I completely blew it. The one time I come around, I'm like, I'm going to do this right. And then I just completely blew it. That one time I ran over like 6 cones, which had to red flag the whole session. Anyway, so I don't like cones. So
you were that guy.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He was.
That was me. But I think, like, as I rode it more and more, found out where I actually could hold my braking till. The only part that I would say I still miss the full straight for is that straight is so long that it was such a nice break.
Yeah.
On a track day, I had time to come around, hit the straight, get up into fifth gear, and then just kind of hold it and hang out because I'm not trying to set a lap record, not trying to go crazy or set land speed records or anything. So I could just kind of hang out and then pick apart my last lap and say, I want to work on this here for my next lap. And I had time to do that on that straight, and having the chicane, you kind of lose that. So
yeah, you do. I agree. There's no place to brake or slow down or take a breath or anything now without the long straightaway. You're turning all the time, turning and braking and gassing. There's no place to rest.
But it really is an equalizer though, if for different size bikes, you know, because I ride a 400 and it's interesting, like people on bigger bikes, when you didn't have the chicane, they could really just get away from you with that long straight, but the chicane really kind of is an equalizer. And there's not a huge speed disparity going through the corners on a littler bike or a bigger bike. Yeah. So generally, the bigger bikes don't really get away from you until you're coming out of, you know, and going up into turn 11, that's where they'll start to gap you a little bit. But before that, I mean, the chicane all the way through turn eight, they can't really get away from you too much. So I do feel like it's an equalizer if you're on a smaller bike.
Yeah, that's fair, but I almost might not like it more for that reason also. Being lazy and riding a bigger bike, it was real nice to just kind of pull out, head down. And the other thing too is, especially on a track day, you catch a lot of people that do brake very, very, very early at the end of that straight. And so you can hold your braking, knowing that that turn will naturally kind of shave off some speed.
Right.
You can hold your braking so late, and I was able to just kind of catch a lot of people right there at the end of that straight. So that, and then I think the chicane, I'm curious to get your guys' take, I guess, but when you're coming out of it back actually through turn one, I never knew, because you don't have speed coming out of it necessarily. And so how wide do you actually need to go? There's a whole track there, but you don't have to use it because you're not necessarily going fast.
No, when they put the chicane in and started running the chicane, it actually, I think your terminal speed from one to two and up to three was faster than it was before without the chicane, because you were slowing down so much.
Right.
You come out of chicane now, and like on our little bikes, the 400s that we race, I mean, you're wide open fifth gear through it. So when you get down to two, you don't have to brake nearly as hard because you're not going so much faster. And it just allows you to roll up the hill and over it with a lot more momentum.
And the people that are good through the two and three complex, I mean, they could, you can really get away from people if you roll enough speed through there. So it's surprising, you know, chasing some of the fast people through that section, how fast they will take two and three. But I will say on turn one, like if you're going through turn without the chicane, going through turn one at the speed that you can actually take turn one at, I mean, takes a pair of cojones.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it does.
You know, because you can haul butt through there a lot faster than people think that you can. Hence the reason why you're passing so many people there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever got anywhere close to how fast you could. I heard you guys talking about that one time coming into there, like still in sixth gear, just going and going and going. And yeah, it's turn one of the ridge is, I could talk about that for hours, but anyway.
Hairball.
Yeah. And the other thing that I have done with a few people is, you know, if you have somebody who's a really solid racer or solid rider, if you have somebody riding with you to kind of tow you through turn one so you weren't using the chicane, or also through some of these other turns that I feel like are pretty hairball, like going down seven into turn eight and eight, is it 8A or 8B? How fast you can go down into the right-hand eight turn, but also going up into turn 11, how late people are on the brakes up into turn 11. I mean, it's like really shocking when you're riding with someone who's a real solid racer about how fast you actually can go. And I'm thinking, well, apparently I'm back here having a cigarette and a margarita while you're racing race. You know, but it's good. It was really shocking to me riding with the people who are really good in those areas about how fast they can actually go through those areas. And then, like, you know, Don Williams, the GOAT wrangler, when I was actually racing against him, here he comes right on the inside of eight, where he's been telling me, hey, you're way slow in eight. Here he comes right down the inside of me in eight, passing me. And I was like, damn it. Should have known he was going to pass me there.
He was setting you up.
Yeah. He already knew I was slow there. He didn't have to set me up.
Yeah. I do remember my first time going down the hill at seven there. It was, I didn't know that you could brake and go down a hill at the same time while trying to go into a corner. And it was very scary. Post like years later, I got a lot better there. Not probably still, I think honestly, anyone has something to learn in those turns. There's always a different way to take it. But yeah, the first time I came down that hill, I'm like, do I downshift? Do I brake? There's too much going on all in one spot.
Right.
So
there's a lot going on. There's a, you know, I got some stories about rev matching, which I don't do very often anymore during racing. When you have these manual bikes and such, it's a little bit different experience, but downshifting, it's a right-hand turn. There's not a lot of right-hand turns on the track there. People's lines are kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, your race line, your defensive line is a lot different than just your non-defensive line through there. So, and then if you're, you know, trying to rev match or something, the rear wheel spin can really kind of get you upset going down into that corner. And one of the things the Ridge has that, you know, a lot of people over the wintertime will race at Chuck Walla, which doesn't have any hard braking zones. And the Ridge has a couple of really hard braking zones. And so you start thinking about some of these different things like, you know, rev matching and different things like that, which you have not been doing all winter long, you know, and you forget that you have some of these really hard braking zones, you know, specifically turn 13 and going into the chicane. And then the other thing that you don't realize is how fast you can actually carry speed up into turn 6, the big left-hand carousel. So it's a super fun track though.
It is awesome. I like it. I might have found a rival to it a week or two ago down in Alabama, but the Ridge is...
What racetrack?
Barber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Have you been to Pitt Wraith?
Not yet. No.
That's rad. That's a...
Jenny here got to ride with the BTR program 2 years ago.
Oh, really? Awesome.
She did the BTR road race program and got to ride a lot of those tracks. And...
Yeah, so Barber's super fun, but Pitt... It was like one of those racetracks where you come off of that racetrack and your eyes are like saucers. You're like, oh my God, that was so freaking awesome. Yeah. Such a fun racetrack. I feel like that was one of my, that and Barber were literally like some of my most favorite tracks to ride on. Yeah. You know, Barber is just an experience in itself.
True.
The, at Pitt, the area outside of the racetrack is not really, doesn't leave a whole lot to be desired.
Okay.
But so the racetrack is great.
Can we talk about the BTR stuff a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were in the first year they did it then?
Second year.
Are they in their fourth year?
I think they're in the fourth year. First year, I think they only had like 7 girls that did it. And the... second year, there was 15 of us that did it.
I know 3 of the girls that are doing it this year, and 2 of them are in their second year. And it's just interesting hearing how it changes from year to year.
Right.
I think you probably had to learn a lot in the beginning. The whole program itself had to.
Yeah. So when I did it, we got a bike from a local dealership or whatnot. So, and then you brought the bike home and then you built the bike. And so now I believe that they take it to like one area. I think they did it in Texas this year where they all get together and build the bike. But I got the bike from what was the name of the
Triumph of Seattle?
It was Triumph of Seattle where I got the bike at and built it in the garage. And I had never built a bike before. I hadn't done very much mechanicking before. And it was, I mean, the program was hard. I don't know if you guys mechanic much, but if you've never mechanicked, it can be kind of daunting. And I learned a lot and there was a lot of travel. It was such an interesting program for me upon reflection, because it really built my confidence in the fact that I can do this. I can work on a bike. I can change tires. I can change gearing. I can, you know, change my chain and different things that I never thought that I could do on my own. And then also it was the first time that I had really done any racing or anything like that without Alan there. So Alan has always been there to support me, to answer my dumb questions. When I first started racing, I was very excitable about it, you know, stressed out, worried about it. And so he'd always kind of like talk me off the edge. So it was the first time being in an atmosphere by myself where I was doing all these things. But the confidence that I gained from the program is actually one of the things that I just think was the most amazing thing about the program. About, you know, I can trailer my own trailer to the racetrack. I can be there by myself. I can run the track days. If that's what I'm doing, I can instruct, I can control ride. I can ride in any of the, you know, the advanced or intermediate or the relaxed or whatever I need to do, and I don't feel worried about it anymore. And so I try to kind of give that lesson to specifically to women who are newer to the track of like, you know, don't overthink this stuff. Just get out there and ride your freaking bike. Like, don't overthink all this stuff. You have to actually, you know, put your butt in the seat and really try to say, hey, let's just focus on the fundamentals of riding a motorcycle, because they don't change. And I try, you know, when things go wrong, I tell people, I'm like, well, if you think about it, the inputs that you give to the bike or what decides what the bike does. So let's focus on the fundamentals, because the fundamentals don't change. What you have is you have your application of the fundamentals. How good am I applying these fundamentals? Because how a bike is designed by an engineer, it's, you know, it's basically kind of the same across the board. It's just how we're applying these fundamentals. So I try to make sure that we're focusing on the fundamentals, that first off, we know the fundamentals. I think that a lot of people come to the racetrack and don't necessarily know the fundamentals. And especially as a woman, you have everybody who wants to give you advice of what you should be doing. And you don't always necessarily know if they're qualified to give you advice. So I'm always like, are they like, why should I listen to you? Like, is your advice going to high-side me to next Tuesday? Or is this really like valid advice? Right. And so, it's interesting that people will kind of listen to anybody. Yep. You also have people that will kind of take coaching from anybody. And that's a lot about what track time is about teaching the fundamentals, making sure that the person that you're taking instruction from is qualified. And we do a lot of work, and Don Williams does a lot of work, to make sure that all of our coaches and instructors, that they're actually qualified to teach you the correct fundamentals to operate a motorcycle. Like what makes up grip, trail braking, reasons why we fall down, you know, different things like that, that everyone's speaking the same language. Right. And that the people who are teaching newer students are actually qualified to teach you, and they're teaching you the right thing. You know, I think that there's a lot of people out there that have a lot of weird information about how to go fast on motorcycles.
And one reason we chose Don to do that is he's been involved with the Yamaha Champions Riding School for several years. He's an advanced instructor there. He lives up here in our neighborhood. You know, he's been working with us since 2019.
And it's not just because of the goats.
No, it's not just because of the goat. He actually has some
50-50
skills.
50-50.
Okay. He's actually got a little bit of skills. And right, so good. We hired him to coach our coaches, basically.
So what's interesting is Don is a very successful private coach. And so since we were kind of taking him off the market, like we employ him at track time to coach the coaches. Because just because you want to coach, first of all, doesn't mean that you're a great coach. Just because you are a good motorcycle rider doesn't mean you're a good teacher.
Right.
And so for the people that have the desire to want to coach, we wanted to be able to have an avenue for them to get the mentorship that they want to become better instructors. And then also with growing the sport, it's like you have to be able to grow your instructor pool of qualified instructors. And how else do you do that besides having somebody to instruct the instructors? And so it's been really great. And the staff who are instructors really enjoy it, because they too are looking for some type of self-fulfillment and to work on themselves as well. Right. And so I think that that's a really good model, where we just have Don dedicated to working with the staff, the instructors, but also when we have people that reach out to us when they buy a ticket and they want to have instruction for the day, Don sends out like a pre-assessment asking them about what they're looking for, what they want to work on, what level they're at. And Don takes the time to go through all of these, you know, things that he's assessing to match them with the coach who's best set up or who can best provide them what they're looking for. Because we have a variety of coaches that can teach at different levels, and they all have that kind of their specific niche things that they're good at. Some can teach very fast, advanced people. Some of them are very into data, you know, the AIM Solo data and things like that. Mm-hmm. Then we have others that are really great at working with brand new people and things of that nature. So it's been really great having Don in that role.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So kind of on the note of instructors sticking through the track day theme. So we just recently started doing track days out here on the East Coast. We've come across a couple organizations that they require you, no matter what, almost no matter what, to start in their novice bottom group. Yeah. In the bottom. And then you have to be evaluated by one of their control riders or instructors or whatever to get bumped up. And they treat their bumps kind of wild. They'll like make a whole Facebook post and be like, this guy earned their bump today, and give him the sticker and everything. And I don't remember that happening anywhere on the West Coast. So I was just kind of curious, you know, as track day organization owners, operators, whatever it might be, to get your take on that, since I've seen it both ways, not sure which way I think
that's interesting.
I think it's valuable. I know back there, and I know who you're talking about. we have experience with them too. I don't know if they, if they're getting more new riders to the days that they don't know. Mm-hmm. Lucky for us, we have a, you know, we have a customer base that, at least here in the Northwest, we pretty much know who you are when you sign up.
Right.
And when it comes to coaching and stuff like that, we've pretty much seen you before, or we know of you. So we haven't had to really go that way. Thank God, because that's just another two or three steps that we would have to implement.
I feel like the group you're talking about runs track days all up and down the East Coast, correct?
There's several groups out here that are actually still doing it. Not still, but yeah, and they're all over. Yep.
And I see validity to that, because when you have people who, I mean, you guys know, somebody comes off the street, they're like, I'm fast. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I mean, no, you're actually not. And you're not fast at the track. And even when you think you're fast, you probably just haven't ridden with anybody fast. And
yep.
And also we also feel like advanced riding is not just about a lap time. Advanced riding is about finding your direction and being predictable on the racetrack. So you don't necessarily have to be on a leader bag to be in the advanced group. If you're very predictable, you know what direction you're going in and know where you're at on the track, you can be an advanced rider even on a smaller bike. So I think a lot of it has to do with
your skill level.
Your skill level. I watch this video. Every now and then we get somebody out here that is so remarkable in whatever fashion that we all gather around and watch a video that someone took of them. And so we had a guy out here and he was turning under 2 minute lap times with the chicane, which you would think, okay, just a lap time under 2 minutes with the chicane. That's an advanced group rider. And so we're watching the video of this guy, and every corner I'm just like, oh, he's going down. Oh no, here he's going down here. And he's like, oh, wait for it. And like, I'm waiting for this guy to go down literally around 16 freaking corners of the ridge.
Yep.
And I don't know how this guy stayed up.
Missing every apex. And
I mean,
was he on a Yamaha R1?
He was on a big, I don't even know how this guy was maintaining grip. I mean, he was like so on the edge of his tire and he's just like rolling the throttle. I mean, just like pure luck this guy was staying up. And he was in the advanced group and he was, like I said, it was so bad. We kind of gathered around and we were all watching this guy and it was startling. I was like, holy crap, this guy's going to kill himself. This guy's going to take somebody out,
right?
You know, and you could see other people following him. And I'm like, they're not going to pass that guy because they don't want to get collected in the shrapnel of what this guy's doing out there. I think that Alan has a point that a lot of our riders are regulars. So we know a lot of them. And, you know, I had an experience this last weekend where a guy came to me and I can't remember his name. Actually, and he was on a Kawasaki 1000, maybe it was the X10 or something like that. And he was telling me his lap times and he said, do you think I'm ready for the advanced group? I said, well, I don't know that. And so we're talking back and forth about what he had going on. And so I said, okay, I'm going to send exactly what you're describing. I'm going to send a control rider out with you to follow you around and work with you a little bit in the intermediate group to see what he has to say, to see if you're ready for the advanced group or not. And I think that we will probably move towards doing some more of that when we have some people that may be in a questionable group, because I thought that worked out really well. And also I think that the customer, because he was like, do I need to pay you for this? I was like, no, you don't need to, you know, pay us anything for this. We're here to help you ride faster, safer. And it's not just for yourself. It's for, I mean, I think about this. It's for every time that I'm on the racetrack and I don't want you to take me out, you know. It's for everybody that's out on the racetrack. And then also we talk about if you have everybody teaching the same fundamentals, even across all of the organizations, you know, what do they say? Rising tides. There's some saying that goes along with that. But if you're riding with a different organization and you come over to, you know, over to track time, I don't want you to take us out like you're a bowling ball and we're a bunch of bowling pins because a different organization taught you
something else,
you know, the incorrect fundamentals of what you should be doing out there. And so I think that I could see us doing more of that. And I could see if you had a really big organization where you had people that you were unfamiliar with, I definitely see the value in having people start in the bottom group and work their way up. So I think for us, I think that we have such a regular clientele that, and a lot of these people either started out in the, you know, the relaxed group, or we've seen them move up over the years. Some of the people I've actually, there's a girl named Jen, I think it's Shappy, is how you say her name. She's very, very quiet and she's just the tiniest little thing. I remember when I had to kick her out of the relaxed group. I'm like, dude, you are terrorizing the relaxed writers. You have to leave the relaxed group. And she was just like, I don't want to. And I'm like, I'm you don't have a choice. You have to get out. Like, it's, you're too fast. And she was on a Triumph 675.
Speed triple.
And what's even more fascinating about Jen is she's also a mechanic. So you got a girl at the racetrack. You have a girl who is a mechanic. You have somebody who I think inherently has an imposter syndrome, right? And so then she gets to the intermediate group and she's already too fast for the intermediate group. And I'm like, Jen, you need to move out of the intermediate group. She's like, no, I don't want to move out of the intermediate group. I'm like, Jen, you are too fast for the intermediate group. You need to go into the advanced group. And she's like, no, I'm not doing it. And so then one day I just said, hey, you know, you ready to try the advanced group? And she's like, no. And I looked at her. I said, I'm not asking you to marry the advanced group. I'm asking you just to dip your toe in. Mm-hmm. And if it's terrible, we'll go back to the intermediate group. Right. And so this is just happening organically at our track day.
Right.
And so now I see her every time she signs up, and she signs up in the advanced group, and she hauls butt out there, you know. But it's, so a lot of these people over the years, we have seen them go from brand new riders to the first time they've touched their knee puck on the ground, to the first time they've ever fallen down at the track, to now they're regular advanced riders. Jen got her racing license this year.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And so over the years, we've experienced these people kind of growing like that. It's been awesome.
That, and something that I look at it every day we're out there to track with our groups is, you know, these customers are my future staff as well. So we try to pay attention to them and teach them what we can. You know, we've got two or three now that are on staff full time. So, you know, we're growing it. We're trying to be the best track day organization that we can be out here.
Right.
And I don't know how long the instructors or the staff last at other track day orgs. You know, you get some people will hang around for quite a while, but you know, not everybody's got priorities, right? So you might have vacation or kids or family or something. So, you know, we're always trying to kind of watch who we have out there, and they're going to be our next staff as well. So,
when people ask about being part of the track day organization, I always warn them. I'm like, you really want to do that? Because it's not, I don't know if you guys ever work for track day orgs, but it's not like you just buy a ticket and you come out and you do your own thing and have fun. It's, you know, it's a lot of work, and customer comes first. You want to make sure that the customer has a good experience. And there are times where we're very busy and you don't have much time at all to ride for yourself. And then we have days that are not that busy and it's kind of more, you have time to play. And I do most of the scheduling for track time staff. And I do try my best to give each staff member a half day. Like we generally always have 2-day events. I try to give each staff member a half day with no assignments because they're coming out here. They're volunteering,
right?
You know, so I want them to get something out of it. Or we try to do other things, like we've done like a group tire buy or a group Venom, you know, undergear buy, or different things that we can to try and let them know how much we appreciate them, because we're only as good as our staff. It's our staff that actually makes track time so amazing, because without the staff, there's no way that we could, you know, run these great events. But when people want to be on staff, I always say, are you sure you want to do this? Because they are long days. And also it's like, do you have mirrors on your bike? Do you have a kickstand? This is not an event that you want to bring your race bike to,
right,
to turn a bunch of laps at, because inherently when somebody needs help, you have to park your bike in the grass and, you know, help them. And if you're control riding or you're instructing, you need to have mirrors on your bike so you can see what's going on. You can't just continually look behind you, because when you do that, inadvertently something ahead of you happens that you don't necessarily see. So there's a lot of requirements to work for a track day organization. And then also it takes away that, you know, you always look at the track day of like, I'm getting out of work, I'm checking out, I'm going out to have fun. Like, working for a track day organization is work, and the customer has to come first, because ultimately it's about how that customer feels and giving that customer the best experience that they can have. And we always tell the customers, we need to make sure that you get out of it what you want to get out of it. And that means letting us know what you need.
Right.
You have to ask us questions. You have to ask us for help. If you need, you know, whatever you need, we are here to make your day. It's your vacation. We're here to make your day. And sometimes that looks like we had a guy who literally came to our last track event and forgot his helmet. And he lived pretty far away.
Easton Keys, Easton.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess you can hotwire a bike. You can't really hotwire a helmet.
Well, we have some Arai demo helmets, and that I had put in the truck for people that want to try out helmets. And it's just like, well, let's find a helmet that fits you. Or, you know, I forgot a glove, or I forgot my earplugs. Or Alan's actually been so great about people who say they have a minor tip over or what have you. Alan will help them out to get, you know, if you have a handlebar or a foot peg or something that's simple, he'll help people work on their bikes to get their bikes back going. Not everybody has the mechanical aptitude to fix something as simple as, you know, a foot peg.
So the last time I was at the Ridge, that was the Ridge. The last time I was at the Ridge, you come over the PA system and say, so-and-so is looking for a, I had never really heard that at another track or another track day. And
I think the only other time we heard that was actually down at Thunder Hill with the Pacific track time. There was some, I forget what it was. A dude went down and then it was like, Yamaha R6 sprocket, preferably this many tooth. I'm like, sorry, no, I don't have that on me.
Well, a lot of times somebody in the paddock does have what you're looking for. You just don't know it. So it's like, get on the loudspeaker. I also learned that a rear sprocket for an FZ1 fits my Yamaha 400. Never knew that.
Good old Japanese manufacturers trying to keep it easy.
Well, if you guys want to change up the rules, I don't mean to go back so far, but Easton is now living out in the Carolinas. And so I have just left a bike at his place. When I go out to visit, we always do it around a track day or a race or something motorcycle related. Mm-hmm. And please don't ever do that. You have to start in C.
Right.
Me as a club racer, Easton is a avid track day junkie.
Me.
I think neither one of us can stand it. And I'll tell you why. I get like some of the arguments you made. There's absolutely the street squids that show up and they're too embarrassed to start in the bottom. So they're trying to sign up for A group because that's where they must be.
Right.
There is definitely those problems. But for me to get on an airplane to fly all the way to Alabama or somewhere, they promise you that they're going to evaluate you and bump you. But before they've had the opportunity to even look at you, the first four sessions of the day are gone. Right. And then they bump you to B group. And there's some of those have pretty extreme passing rules too. Their C group is zero passing.
Roebling Road specifically, you're only allowed to pass on the straight with a certain organization, and you're stuck down there. And yeah, don't call it C group. Anyway, sorry.
The relaxed group.
If you're an expert rider on a 400, it's pretty hard to pass a Panigale on the straight, no matter how bad the rider is.
Right. Well, one of the things that I will say is when I was riding in BTR, I had gone back to, I don't know what, I feel like I was
Pittsburgh with N2.
Yeah, and I had to call there and say, I'm not riding in the secret, in this, whatever they call it. I said, I'm not riding the beginner. I didn't say that. I said, can I please not ride in the beginner group? Mm-hmm. You know, because that's not my purpose of being out there. You know, my purpose of being out there is to get faster at this track, and I'm racing, and so I don't want to be in the beginner group. And so I did call, and I know one of the owners of N2, and so maybe it was a little bit easier for me because we know one of the guys that owns N2. But one of the things that I can say by limiting the numbers to our track days is that if you need specific attention during the day, even if it's first thing in the day, it's not hard to get you that one-on-one attention because we have enough control riders and the people who have instruction, that's already one-on-one. So that's already accounted for. And if I need to, I myself will suit up or Alan will suit up if we don't have anybody at all to help with somebody. And we've also had times where Alan will suit up and instruct if he needs to. If we are shorthanded or you never know what might happen. Somebody might have a family emergency or what have you or their bike breaks or whatnot. But by limiting the groups, we are not only able to give them the one-on-one attention if somebody wants it first thing in the morning, but we're also able to shift around the group some. So if I had somebody my recommendation would be if somebody was coming out here and they're brand new to the track or this and that, I would say, take a spot in the intermediate group because that sells out first. So it's hardest to get into the intermediate group and it's easier to get into the other groups. And also I work with people throughout the day too, because I'm a tractate junkie, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, I just made a made a post. We try to make posts, but neither one of us are really into social media. And it's like, are you an addict? It's like, yes, I am. And I just made this little post that showed a bunch of track day pictures. But I think about my own experience. Like, and if I am stuck in a group where I'm super annoyed, I'm not having a good time. I'm out there and I'm annoyed, right? And so I work with people throughout the day. It's like, you've never been here before, but you're an advanced rider. Like, do some siding laps in the relaxed group, or, you know, I'll move them around throughout the day. And since our group counts are lower, it's easier to do that. We don't have 50 people in a group. So It's not hard to move people around to different groups. But if somebody comes out and wants to and says, hey, can I, you know, do a couple sessions in the intermediate group? And not a lot of people ask this, but if they do and they're really like, okay, I have this down, now can I jump to the advanced group? I'm always, you know, I'm always there to help them move around for what they need throughout the day. Or, you know, if they want to do some lead follow laps with some control riders, then I try and find a control rider to hook them up with to kind of get them going and stuff. But it's a lot easier to be able to manage the day. Now, granted, it does put a cap on our revenue, but I think that that's okay in the fact that we have so many regular repeat customers because they enjoy their experience. And so we're more likely to have the majority of our days sell out, even when we have some crappy days like a Wednesday, Thursday or whatnot, because people know that they're going to come have a good experience and we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that they have a good experience.
Right. And I love the 2-day events as well.
Yes.
2 days. I'm addicted to 2 days now. I can't do it one day.
You have to, especially if you're traveling or coming from any distance.
Yeah.
We get a lot of people come down from Canada. We get a lot of people come up from Northern California. We've had people flying. We had a guy buy a season pass the last 2 years, flying from Chicago, rent a bike and get our high-end instruction.
Right.
Wow.
You know, every day or every event. And yeah, it's just, so I think we've really done a good job of catering to those people that are looking for that experience and wanting that help.
We also have a fleet of track ready Ninja 400s for rent.
So whenever you guys are ready to come out and you think you can run with me on a 400 Ninja.
I know I can't, Alan, because I tried to run with you on a 750 and you outran me. So, but I do need to get on a 400 one day and actually
learn how to ride. They're so fun. Like around the ridge, it's just like wide open. You only break for 13 and 11 and the chicane. Other than that, you're just...
I actually specifically remember watching you two come around the outside of me in turn 6 on 2 little Ninja 400s. And I looked at you and I was like, I am... Wow. Okay. Anyway, that was... It was still a great day. It's just... I tried to latch onto you for a little bit. I've found myself doing that throughout the years, honestly. You know, for any listeners that are on big bikes that think you're fast, when you blow past a 400 on the straight and then he passes you again, you know, on the first or second turn of the track, just follow him for a little while. You might learn a thing or two. So
that's true. That's fair.
We always say going fast in a straight line is easy.
True.
It's the corners.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. But yeah, I mean, you know, Cole and I think both can attest to we really enjoyed riding with you when we did. And not to say I won't ever do it again. It might be a while for me being 36-hour drive now. But
they just offered. You fly out and you rent a Ninja 400.
True. Which is
true.
You know?
You commit and we'll make it happen.
All right. It's tempting. I'll let you know. We'll be in touch. But yeah, you know, just kind of to wrap up that topic, haven't been... You know, I've ridden Washington, California, Oregon, Arizona, Utah, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina. I'm by no means the fastest guy on any of these racetracks, but I'm also by no means the slowest guy out there. Right. And so to hop to a new place, be excited to go, and to be forced to ride down in the bottom with very stringent rules. And I'm not a very talkative person. I'm not going to go up and yell at everyone and say, case, I'm faster than this. I need to be bumped up, right? Because I'm not that guy. I don't want to ruin anyone else's day. And so You end up spending almost all day in a group that you're not necessarily having as much fun in. It's nice to hear that you guys can kind of work around that a lot easier with your setup. And I appreciate that. Keep it up, because I think it is the better way to do it. I do also see the other side of it where, you know, if you're running multiple different racetracks up and down the coast, you got new people coming in. I 100%, but I would... In my opinion, you know, I actually just we do, I have a YouTube channel also, which this podcast will be on, but I have some other videos, and one of those videos just barely is just kind of talking about the things that I do and don't like about track day organizations specifically. Right. And I think that it is, you know, my job as a friend bringing someone else to a track day to tell them start out in the bottom.
Right.
Or our job as this podcast, I think we've said before, if it's your first time at a track day, just start in the bottom. If you're fast, right, they'll know pretty freaking quick and you'll get moved up quick. But you don't want to start off and get your doors blown off, as we say here.
Our biggest challenge really is because our intermediate group will sell out so quick, people will start fudging. Oh, there's room in the relaxed group, so I'll just buy a relaxed group ticket and then they'll bump me. So that's kind of the challenge we have to work with. And we figure those guys out pretty quick. And if that's what they're doing, you know, we make phone calls and say, you're going to ride in the relaxed group and you're going to ride by those rules. And if you don't, you're done.
Right.
And as soon as we can get a place to bump you to, we will do that. But that might not happen. You got to consider that. Do you really want to come ride?
Yeah. And the other thing that we also teach, because I heard you talking about how they don't allow passing in some groups, is we don't do that. We always teach. I mean, passing is such a big deal. And passing is one of the main things that I think holds up not only group riding, but it just holds up people from being able to progress as a rider. And so when people come to the track and they are in the newer group, I don't know what other people call their
relaxed, or
they've got somebody to, I said C group to someone out here. They had no idea.
So the relaxed group. So that, you know, again, the fundamentals are the same, right? And so we teach, even in the relaxed group, the fundamentals of passing, right? The person is parallel or moving away from you. That's you're passing for the comfort of the rider that you're passing. It's the passing rider's responsibility to pass for the comfort of the rider that you're passing. So we start instilling these fundamentals right when you hit the track, because again, the fundamentals are the same. So we don't say, oh, you can't pass at all, or there's only passing during the straights, because then you have somebody out there inherently who's very slow. So we start teaching this right from the beginning of when you come out. It's like that parallel or moving away. So then when they actually get a little bit faster, or they decide that it's time to move up into the intermediate group, they still have those fundamentals in their mind of like parallel or going away from. And then also we always say, hey, if you make a bad pass, throw a hand up, throw a wave. You know, we don't inherently try to make bad passes, although we all have. But you make a bad pass, you apologize to the person, whether you throw a hand up and say, hey, I'm sorry, or whether you find him in the pit and say, man, that was a really crappy pass, I'm super sorry. And it diffuses the situation right away before people get excited. And so we start teaching those fundamentals and like as soon as people go out in the relaxed group, to teach them the fundamentals of how a motorcycle operates and how you ride safely at the racetrack.
Good, good, good. I like it.
That's good.
So, and apologize with all your fingers, right?
Try to.
Yeah.
You know what? I have actually been guilty of that. And thank God it was not at our event. And I had going down into, turn 13 goes down the, I know, I couldn't believe I did this. Going down into turn 13, I had the inside line. It was race practice. And this guy turns in early and hits me going into turn 13. And I turned right around instantly. And I'm an adult. I turn around instantly and I flip the guy off instantly. And I was like, I'm yelling at him in my helmet, like, you know, MF, or what are you doing? I mean, it's a race day. And also like it's intramural racing, where this is not professional racing. And so then when we got off the racetrack, I went over and apologized and told him I should not have done that. And then I said, hey, but can we make an agreement to not touch each other on the track? Is that cool?
Right.
And he said that and it's funny because he was young, you know, he was like 17. And that's even more so of like, don't knock me down. Like, I'm an old lady. Don't do that to me. And so he said, well, I thought you were going to turn in earlier. And I said, regardless of when you thought I was going to turn in, like, you still shouldn't hit me.
Yeah.
You know, and so we had that conversation. And what was interesting, and I don't say this a lot on the racetrack. I don't get too excited on the racetrack. Very rarely where I am either afraid or I. And so anyway, me and this kid are going down into turn 8 later the day, and it's still, I don't know if it was still the race practice or it must have been warm-ups during the race day. And I literally said out loud in my helmet, I'm like, this kid is going to knock me down today. Like, he was just so out of control in turn 8 and 8A. I was just like, this MF-er is going to knock me down today. And I'm going to go over and kick his bike over in his pit because I'm going to be mad. And then it must have been the first race he high-sided in turn 12 and packed up and went home. So
didn't have to worry about it after that.
Yeah. But I couldn't believe my reaction. I'm like, I always tell people, like, you know, don't get too excited and this and that. And I turned around and instantly flipped that guy off. And I was just like, oh, I am a great example right now.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That's right.
It happens to everybody every once in a while.
Yeah, when people come to my pit and they're very, very mad, I always say, do not go talk to the person right now, because it's not good. And so a lot of times I'll go over there and talk to the person who was part of the, you know, altercation on the track. And a lot of times they don't even know what has happened. But right. I always say, you know, just let it chill for an hour and you'll feel different, because people come off the track and they'll be pretty hyped up
and steamed.
Yeah. Let time pass. And
yeah, well, I mean, your heart rate's going and who knows what, you know, all the incidents. I know Cole's had a couple incidents always down in Las Vegas for some odd reason. but it can be very easy to be very upset right in that instant.
Especially. Oh yeah, for sure.
I've got a question on my list here.
All right, let's get it.
I was curious what your take is on this show. We talk a lot about, you know, trying to get people to the track, trying to build the sport, racing, track days in general. What is your feeling up there in Washington? Is over the last 5 years, has the sport grown, shrunk, stayed the same?
I would say it's growing a little bit. You know, when I was racing, there was 200 or 300 people in the pits. And when the economy took a dive in 08, 09, I guess it was, you know, the whole community kind of shrunk right up. But it's coming back, and we're seeing it with the track day groups. I think our attendances are going up every year, and we're seeing more and more of those guys, you know, doing the novice schools and things like that for Wurma and Omra. So I think it's growing. It's, you know, we don't know what's going to happen this November, so I'm sure people are going to stack their money away and wait to see what happens, but
right.
I think if you're really an enthusiast, it doesn't really matter. You know, you want to get out and ride, but when there's an availability or the time to do it. So I think it's okay. I think it's doing pretty good.
And I will add to that track time is so open to newer riders coming out and joining us. Whether you have questions about getting your bike ready, whether you have questions about gearing, whether you have questions about, you know, what do I do when I first come out to the track? You know, we have people that we can set you up with, or we always tell people you can come pit with us if you have questions. And we do the same thing for racing. It's like, if you want to come pit with us during racing, come pit with us and we'll help you out. And so it's just a very welcoming atmosphere and mm-hmm. very non-intimidating. Specifically, I think that some women will be more apprehensive to come to the racetrack by themselves. Or if they don't have like a boyfriend or a spouse who is into motorcycles or whatever. So if you have a couple girls that want to come down, it's just like, we can help you out with whatever you need. We can get you onto the track, into the relaxed group. And I mean, we are realistic about their skill set, you know, and we're not thinking that people are something that they're not. But I think that you have a non-intimidating atmosphere where people can come and feel welcome. And it's really kind of like a great family atmosphere. And one of the things that I say, and I don't know how it is where you guys live, but like property crime and different things around here can sometimes be kind of a little bit out of control. And I'm like, the racetrack is literally like one of the last places where you can leave your stuff out and someone doesn't steal it.
Right.
Right.
True.
So at least at our events. And so I'll tell people, you know, if they're staying at a hotel or whatever, I'm like, you can leave your bike in our pit with us, because we, you know, at our events, we go out to the racetrack and we stay there the entire time, even though we're only like 30 minutes away from the racetrack. But when we have events, we're on the premise the entire time. We have the RV out there and we're out there for whatever people need. And it is nice to only live in 30 minutes away. I have to say that. So if you forget something or have to run back, you know, we've had to come back here either for like suits or helmets or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you need, then the house isn't too far away, so that makes it nice. I have to. There was one time I had a small get off during a race round, and when I had fallen down, I skidded my head across the pavement, so my helmet was done. And so they pull your sticker and they won't let you use that helmet again. And so I had a backup helmet in the in our RV. And so I pulled it out. It was in a ride box. And I opened up the ride box. It was a freaking dirt bike helmet. It wasn't a... I was like, are you kidding me? And so my friend looks at me and she's like, let's drive to the house, because I was kind of on the verge of like, I'm not going to... She's like, nope, let's drive, you know. So at least it's... at least we're close by if we need to come back here for something.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I used to live only an hour away, and I would actually have my wife come out. I would leave nice and early in the morning. She'd come out basically around the time of the first session. So right. If I did forget anything, just like bring it out, and it was perfect.
Yeah, and we do think that it's important to continue to grow the sport. And one of the things that we talk about, just to add on to what Cole was asking, we also feel like people's first experience, like if they have a crappy first experience, or they go out into the racetrack and, you know, they get strafed by somebody who's with a 100-mile-an-hour speed differential and scares the crap out of them, or a negative experience, then the likelihood of them coming back is pretty small. Right. So you want to make sure that people are having a good experience, and they know that we take safety seriously. And we want to, again, teach people the fundamentals of how you can go faster and be safe, so you have repeat customers versus people who are... I don't know about you guys, but I've had some moments in my life where I was afraid to be on my bike for, you know, a variety of bad choices I've made on the racetrack. And I wasn't having any fun, and I didn't want to ride it anymore. What would I say to you? Bikes for sale. Bikes for sale. I'm done. Right.
It's true. That is true. Yeah. A couple times.
Yeah. So with that though, does track time, you know, as an organization, you guys are a track day organization, do you guys promote racing with WIMRA? Do you pick people out at all? Okay.
So no, right in the writers meeting, you know, if you want to go race, this track time is not where we do that. If you want to go race, there's WIRMA, there's OMRA. But if you want to get faster and you want to learn how to ride, be a better rider, this is what we're going to do. But like I say, we've got quite a few people that have come through our organization that have gone on to WIRMA and raced. So,
and we sponsor
a couple classes with WIRMA, and okay, we're doing everything we can to promote it and keep the club alive.
And every race round that is not Portland, we're at. And Alan reminds me that I am racing and he's not racing, so inherently, apparently, that's unfair right now.
I agree.
So, and I remind him that when he races, it's inherently unfair to me, because then who's my pit crew? Like, what the hell? He's going to pull off the tire warmers and stuff for me. And we actually, last year was it the first time that we actually raced against each other? Okay. And so there was some scuttle around the paddock
Ask him who won, Easton.
Yeah, who? Okay.
Alan won.
Was there any naughty fingers at that point, or
he's got this weird old man speed? I don't understand it. I haven't gotten there yet. Like, he just has this weird old man speed. Like, his bike has, he must have a cheater bike, or he's got like 7 gears or something. So it's weird. It's like some of the, you know, I don't know. Like, do either of you guys race? Easton, you don't race, but Cole, do you race?
Yeah.
Do you race against any old dudes that are just super weirdly fast?
Well, I want to be that guy, but yes.
We have some guys that have been racing, you know. Alan, what year did you start racing?
1984.
I always tell people he was number one in Washington when tires were square, where they made tires square. But he goes out there and he doesn't even have to ride that often, and he can go out there and just turn. I mean, he can turn some amazing lap times even on like a completely stock bike. And so when we go out and race, it's, you know, he
we won't mention that I'm blind in one eye either.
Yeah, right. But we did go down to Chuck Walla, and he had a really bad wreck in 2011 at BIR, and had a mechanical and got ran over by another bike, and he was in ICU for a while with punctured lung and shattered wrist and a bunch of, I mean, it was just bad.
No good.
And it took him a couple years to get over that, and he didn't ride after that. And so we went down to Chuck Walla 2 or 3 years ago, and he hadn't raced since 2011. And he literally put it on the podium like 3 times.
Heck yeah. Well, that's what's up. You just got the old, like,
whatever.
You know, back.
That's saying something to Chuck Walla as well.
That's true. Yeah. The CV, we've got a pretty good tie with CVMA, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a bunch of fast guys down there. So I was so proud of him. And I didn't race because since he hadn't raced in so long, I was like, all right, I'm going to give you this one. And
somebody's got to take off the warmers.
Right.
That's good. Me.
The nice thing about, you know, being down to CVMA is we don't get the chance to ride up here that time of year. And we can go down there and kind of just keep in riding shape and things. And 2 years ago when we were down there, I ran into Dave and Kayla Yakov. And I used to race against Dave back when the Suzuki Cup stuff used to go on with the big contingency stuff back in Atlanta. And we didn't know each other, but, you know, I introduced myself and Kayla was riding that Ninja 400 a couple years ago. And I said, well, shoot, if you guys get a chance to come up early or whatever, you know, I got a 400 Ninja you can ride. And they took us up on it. And one thing's led to another. And you know, we help her out. We sponsor her now. And we're on her helmet. And they come up here and stay at the house when they're up here. And she's one of our advanced coaches, too. So,
yeah. That's been actually really great with her and Dave. And since we're so close to the track, and we have a big house, and there's only two of us here, and so they'll come here and they'll, you know, fly into Seattle and they'll stay here. And so it's actually been really great. And then people have been so excited for Kayla to come out to Track Time Days, and so she's working as a private coach at Track Time Days, and literally our customers are like, let me give you my money. You know, they're just so excited to see Kayla, and her dad are such nice people. You know, the other thing I wanted to say about when we went down to Chuckwalla is that Alan had never ridden at Chuckwalla before ever. So he'd never seen the track, and he was on somebody else's bike and he still managed to put it on the podium a couple times, but that's where he ran into Dave and Kayla. And so we've kind of like developed this relationship with them, and we try and help them out where we can. I mean, we're not anything special or rich, but when they do come out this way, we try to
do our part to support them.
And Alan got hooked up with bike dealership up here called So Cycle that have given him
they gave us a Panigale V2 for Kayla to coach on.
Oh, wow.
So we just go up and pick it up and bring it out to the track, and she rides it. And it's a demo type program stuff. And so they've also asked me to come out and do the Ducati Revs event in August to facilitate that with them. And the Champ School's part of that as well. So I'm kind of facilitating some of that as well. So it's just, you know, we just try and we're all work together and support the sport.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I do want to say, though, that when you guys actually get on a plane and come out here and ride the 400s, I feel like we should do a podcast from the ridge.
We can make that happen. I love the ridge a lot. And so there's no way I'm not ever going back there. So we will be back up there at some point, whether by plane or I take the old rolling stable, as we call it, my motor home, and just make the trek anyway. You just got to get your diesel prices to come down a little bit.
Yeah. And you guys, if you guys can make it, let me know. We'll take care of you and you guys get out there and play around with us again.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
That'd be fun. And it'd be cool too to have you meet Don. Another funny story about Don. I wish he was here. He's a retired Marine major. So
okay.
Don doesn't take no guff, but when he showed up here, he's from San Diego. I think he's originally from New Mexico, actually, but on the back of a suit, it says the goat, and people didn't know Don. Right. And people are like, my God, this guy's humble. He really thinks he's the greatest of all time. And I look at him, I'm like, no, he's actually a goat farmer.
So they're like, okay.
All right.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so he's a real great, he's just a great part of Track Time. We're lucky to have him. And some of the people, when I was, talking to you about how people come out and they overthink things and such. I've had some, and it's not just specific to women, but I have had some women ask me like, how do you not overthink things? And I was just like, pitting with Alan and Dawn, like, are you serious? Like anytime I try to overthink anything, they're just like, I'm like, they have extinguished any part of my brain that overthinks things. I said, the best thing a racer can have is a short memory. Like you, I know that you bend that bike in the warm up lap, but get back on your bike and ride. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so all these years of pitting with Don and Alan, has just made me, again, you focus on the fundamentals of how you ride a bike. And we're not going to talk about the what ifs. We're not going to overthink, you know, this or that. You need to, you know, if you're going to think about anything, think about being an adjustable rider, you know, be more adjustable to the situation that you have out there and go out there and ride how you know to ride and focus on the fundamentals. So it's actually been it's been a great journey for me in becoming just a more confident rider and not thinking about the what ifs. And I mean, so much fun, like for Cole racing and such, I never knew how much I would love riding motorcycles. I was pretty late to the motorcycle riding game. I never learned to ride a motorcycle till I was 30. I think 37 was the first time I rode a motorcycle. So to think where I have, you know, gone that year I rode with BTR. I mean, I got to go all over the United States and ride all these different racetracks at Moto America, being able to work with Track Time, racing here locally. It's such a huge part of my life. I just couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine my life without motorcycling. It's just would be a very hollow existence for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's great to hear. And, I think we feel similarly. I didn't wait till I was.
You didn't. Yeah. You're still.
I didn't wait. Yeah.
Like he's not even that old yet. He's not even that old yet. So I'm
about 12 years old. So.
I'm 40. Anyway. I'm 49, and Alan is 59. Going to be coming up on 60 here soon. So we're oldies but goodies.
Well, I strive to make it there one day.
I don't know anything better, right? I found something I was good at and have fun doing, and you know, it doesn't get any better than that, really. So,
yeah, I agree. Oh, yeah. Something to look forward to always. You made it into a living, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And you're doing a great job at it. You know, I can't stress enough. Like I said, I know you don't know us directly, but we have been out there. We've taken a few pot shots at a couple riding groups or whatever, but I don't recall ever taking a pot shot at you guys. I think we both really like riding with you. And
you're going to be out here on Monday, huh?
Are you riding Monday and Tuesday? Monday and Tuesday?
Just Monday.
Maybe we'll come out and say hi.
Yeah, we should swing out there and say hi to you.
We just had JD Beach and like Kalo here last week, so.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, and was it last year?
Last year we had
a bunch of Stefano people cycle through for our Wimmer racing. It was pretty fun. You had a bunch of Moto America people come through. It was
Stefano was there and
Patricia Fernandez and Corey West, and
Tyler O'Hara was up here.
Wow.
All those guys that never saw the track before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was actually pretty fun. And like I said, there was a group of them that came and raced out in Wimmera. And so that was fun. And you know, it's like you get these local guys that it's their home track. Right. And some of these local guys are fast AF at their local tracks, you know. Mm-hmm. And you see that too at Moto America when you have some of these local guys that are doing pretty good in the Moto America.
Yeah, for sure. That so this comes out on Wednesday, but Moto America is happening as we're talking, right? Earlier today. And I seen Stefano Mesa was the top so far.
Yeah.
Super today sport. And I just seen him last weekend in Utah, the weekend before in Utah, the track day before in Utah. I mean, those guys don't get off of bikes.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope. That is what they do.
It's their life. Yeah.
A little jealous. Still got to work a normal job to get on a bike here and there on the weekend. So,
yeah. Well, you know, you go two paths in your life. You either become a professional motorcycle racer and accept being completely poor, or you work a day job and you are an intramural motorcycle racer.
Still accept being.
Still probably poor.
Yeah, still poor either way.
but I mean, it's true though. It's like you think it's you know, Alan was telling me back in the 80s, the contingency money that these guys, that the manufacturers paid out was insane.
80s and 90s was good. You could make $30,000 a year racing, and back then that was pretty good money.
Yeah, right. That's awesome. Well, I think we're hoping for, I don't know if we'll ever see that again per se, but you know, the reason we're doing this podcast and getting guests like you guys on here is to just kind of, I'm trying to flood the internet with motorcycle content. So we enjoy it. We want everyone else to enjoy it. Keep growing the sport. That's our goal. We like-minded people. So
thank you so much for allowing us the opportunity to come out and talk. So That's awesome.
And anytime you want to talk about motorcycles, I generally will never shut up. And I always tell people, it's just like, I mean, because I'm a contract manager for a living. And so it's not super thrilling. It's like a lot of contract stuff. But anytime somebody wants to talk about motorcycles or ask me about motorcycles, suddenly I have all kinds of stuff to say in meetings about motorcycles. But I also, the other thing that I always tell people is that I feel like inherently, for me, this is what I feel that motorcycle riding is good for your mental health. You know, I feel like it gives you a space and a place to kind of leave the woes of your life behind. And they have that cliche of like, you know, be 100% present. I'm like, well, no, on your motorcycle, you are 100% present, because if you're not, you're going to fall down. Yeah, and so it's just like the best way to check out of everything that you have going on in your life and just like complete freedom. And that's another reason why I feel like more women should come out to the racetrack, because you think about, and you guys might not understand this, and I don't have kids, so I don't either, but you think about the pressures of women being a mom and working full time and, you know, all this stuff that goes along with probably a lot of layers of stress. I'm like, I do not know why more women aren't out at the racetrack, just kind of checking out of life and enjoying that freedom that you feel when you're on your motorcycle. So I think it's one of the best things that people can do as a hobby.
Yep. No, I agree. The movie Ford versus Ferrari that came out a couple mm-hmm. years ago, quote in the beginning, you know, there's a point 7,000 RPM where everything fades.
Yeah.
And that quote kind of hit home with me. I was like, yeah, it's true. You get out there, you're on the bike. On a bike, it's just you and a bike. There's no car around you. Right. You got a helmet, a bike, the asphalt beneath you, and that's it. And so for those, you know, those 20 minutes of the session or however many laps of the race, whatever it might be, that's all that matters. So
exactly.
Is that part of your thing revs up?
Huh? That's when it starts.
Hey, my Royal Enfield tacks out at 7,000 RPM. So
there you go.
But I did design a new women's shirt that we haven't had printed yet for track time, and it has our tachometer on it. And when it gets up into the upper region of the tachometer, it's a bunch of little hearts.
I like that. I'm as like, well.
That's my heart. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, we appreciate you guys coming out, joining us this week. It was great to talk with you, and we will definitely at some point see you at the Ridge again.
Yeah.
And
great.
Yeah, and I'd love to see you Monday if you're around.
Yeah, look, we could probably swing out there.
Awesome. And for the viewers, thanks for listening. Hopefully you guys learned a little bit. If you're up in Washington, please go ride with Track Time. We've both done it. We love it. They're doing great things up there. The smaller groups are amazing. So go ride with them. Check them out. Obviously, they do a lot for the sport. We appreciate that. And we will see everyone next week.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.